This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Others use credit cards, but if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or a truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and, at the same time, take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 1-877-803-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 1-877-803-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
This week on Making Contact.
Same people who tried to kill me in 1973 are the same people who are here today trying to destroy me.
In 1971, a San Francisco police officer was killed. Members of the Black Panther Party were arrested, charged, and tortured by San Francisco and New Orleans police. Because of that, the charges were dismissed. Now, more than 35 years later, the case has been reopened. On January 23, 2007, some of those same men have been arrested again. In this special documentary from the Freedom Archives, we hear from some of the accused men themselves. They describe the torture and how they were targeted for their political activities.
This program will be airing February 26th, Monday, at 10:30 p.m. right here on KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Walensky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Greg Chapman.
And Glenn Holt.
And on tonight's program, we have...
With us Rob Scamardo from the New Warriors.
New Warriors?
The New Warriors. Okay. And we'll explain what that's about when he's here.
Certainly got Glenn's interest.
And then we've got members of Alley with on their Act Out series. And this one's the Hitchcock Blondes or something like that. I'm very interested. I want to find out what that's all about.
And also in the second hour, it's Queer Music Heritage Night. And it's going to be Bear Music. Bear music, yes. So
B-A-R-E or B-E-A-R?
You're asking me about
the second one. The furry kind.
The furry kind, oh, okay.
Yes, the kind that aren't bear even when they are, yes.
So all that's coming up on this edition of Queer Voices, and yesterday, of course, was the Oscars.
Yes, and Scorsese finally won his directing Oscar after some, 40 years, something like that.
And the host, of course, was Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
Who was really pretty fabulous, and the Song of the Year was won by Melissa Etheridge, and she thanked her wife.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. I missed that part.
Yes.
Oh, God, that's one. I'm sorry I missed that.
And Ellen actually got probably the best compliment that you can give to a host of the Oscars. She kept the thing on time.
Oh, that was a miracle in itself.
Well, it did run over. It did, but those things always run over.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was...
Kept it down to 4 hours is what I mean.
Yes. Below 4 hours, yes.
So, we have all that coming up in our show tonight, and let's listen to This Way Out News Wrap.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Charles Hall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 24th, 2007. Leaders of the 77 million member Global Anglican Communion have demanded that its member Episcopal Church USA specifically ban official prayers for same-gender couples and the consecration of openly queer bishops. A statement ending a tense six-day conference in Tanzania, which saw some bishops refusing to take communion with presiding Episcopal Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey, said those actions were necessary to undo the damage that North Americans have caused in other Anglican regions or provinces. It said that earlier pledges by Episcopalians for a moratorium on lesbi-gay union blessings and consecrations have been so ambiguous that they have failed to fully mend broken relationships in the communion. The Episcopal Church USA must clarify its position by September 30th, or, the statement said, its relations with other Anglicans will remain damaged at best. This has consequences for the full participation of the Church in the life of the communion.
The meeting in Tanzania was the latest of several attempts to avoid a formal Anglican split over deep differences of biblical interpretation. The long simmering debate erupted in 2003 when Episcopalians consecrated the first openly gay bishop, Gene Robinson, of New Hampshire. Anglican traditionalists believe the elevation of Robinson and blessing same-gender relationships are violations of Scripture, but supporters say that biblical teachings on justice and inclusion should take precedence. They've accused theological conservatives of demanding a conformity among Anglicans that never before existed. Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, the spiritual leader of the communion, doesn't have direct authority to resolve the divisions. He said the statements contained in the document released this week will certainly fall very short of resolving all the disputes, but will provide a way of moving forward with dignity. Jeffords Shorey, who supported the elevation of Bishop Robinson and supports the blessing of same-gender relationships, said she hoped the dialogue among Anglicans would continue. Each party in this conflict is asked to consider the good faith of the other, she said. Both parties hold positions that can be defended by appeal to our Anglican sources of authority, Scripture, tradition, and reason. But she cautioned that a single-minded focus from either side will ultimately hurt the communion. Other Episcopal leaders, though none speaking in an official capacity, have told reporters that if they had to choose between support for their LGBT parishioners and continued membership in the communion, they would choose the former.
A relatively small number of conservative U.S. parishes, however, have left the Episcopal Church to affiliate with outspoken anti-gay Nigerian Archbishop Peter Akinola, who has set up an informal network for traditionalist U.S. parishes as a rival to the Episcopal Church. Anglican leaders at the meeting in Tanzania called for a pastoral council to oversee dioceses and parishes that feel they can't accept Jeffords Shorey's leadership. That may include the creation of an official alternative body to stop U.S. parishes from affiliating with overseas Anglicans, a violation of communion tradition. The Anglican Communion is the world's third largest Christian body, behind the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches. Conflicts over lesbi-gay issues have also challenged several other Christian denominations around the world.
The center-left coalition government of Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi has collapsed, and likely with it, proposed legislation to legally recognize same-gender couples. Prodi resigned this week after left-wing members of his nine-party coalition voted against an important government foreign policy position. Prodi's cabinet, which has only been in place since May 2006, earlier this month agreed to introduce legislation that would have granted legal recognition to gay and lesbian couples. That's something Prodi had promised during his election campaign, but it took months for his cabinet to settle on the specifics of the measure. While short of marriage, the proposal would have allowed same-gender couples to formally register their relationships and gain property, pension, health insurance, hospital visitation, and inheritance rights. That again supported opposition parties in the Italian parliament were expected to fight against the measure, and Prodi's government held only a one-seat majority there. With the collapse of the coalition government, it's doubtful that the legislation will move forward at all. Prodi's government lost a Senate motion backing the continued deployment of troops in Afghanistan by two votes. Italy has 2,000 soldiers there as part of a multinational force. While it wasn't specifically a matter of no confidence, Foreign Minister Massimo D'Alema had earlier said that the government should resign if it didn't win the foreign policy vote. The president of Italy is in talks with political parties to form a new government, which could be announced at any time.
The Republic of Ireland's parliament this week overwhelmingly defeated a bill modeled after Britain's civil partnerships law that would have given gay and lesbian couples all of the rights of marriage. The government of Prime Minister Bertie Ahern, which opposed the bill, is said to be preparing its own legislation to be introduced later this year. It's expected to provide limited recognition of same-gender relationships in property and inheritance rights, but deny lesbian-gay couples other rights of marriage, including adoption rights. Justice Minister Michael McDowell said that the bill defeated this week would have been unconstitutional because it equated civil partnerships with marriage. The Irish Constitution requires the government to defend the institution of marriage, although it doesn't specify how. Ireland's High Court in December rejected legal recognition of the marriage of a lesbian couple who wed in Canada, ruling that there is no provision for same-gender marriage in the Irish Constitution. The couple, Dr. Catherine Zappone and Dr. Anne Louise Gilligan, filed a formal appeal of that ruling this week with the Supreme Court. Northern Ireland, as part of the UK, has had same-gender civil partnerships since December 2005.
France granted limited legal recognition in 1999 to same-gender couples known as Pacts of Civil Solidarity, or PACS. But they fall far short of marriage, and there are no adoption rights. The country's highest court this week said that French law prohibits co-parent adoptions by same-gender couples, rejecting the request of a woman to adopt the biological child of her lesbian partner. The ruling capped a long legal battle for Carla Boni, who sought to adopt the son conceived through artificial insemination of her partner, Marie Laure Picard. The court said that the only way Boni could adopt the child would be for birth mother Picard to renounce her own parental rights, which would not be in the best interest of the child. How can we say that it is not in the interest of the child to recognize the two parents, whoever they may be? Boni told LCI television. This is a political decision that is not in the interest of the child.
But two lesbians from Texas have become the first foreign couple to take advantage of a new law in the Mexican state of Coahuila that recognizes same-gender couples. Maria Carrion Lara and Amparo Maldonado from Midland, Texas, registered their civil solidarity union in Ciudad Acuña this week. The Coahuila state law allows non-residents to register their relationships. Mexico City will also begin recognizing same-gender unions under a similar law that takes effect in mid-March.
And in the U.S., the first same-gender couples got hitched this week under New Jersey's civil unions law, which grants most state benefits of marriage, except the name, to lesbian and gay couples. While activists continue to push for full marriage equality, several towns opened their doors at midnight on February 22nd to couples who wanted to be among the first to apply for a civil union license. There are no residency requirements, so couples from neighboring states are also expected to register their civil unions in New Jersey. It's highly unlikely, however, that a civil union will carry any legal weight in a couple's home state if it doesn't recognize same-gender relationships.
And finally, yet another disgraced U.S. religious homophobe was in the news this week. But the lawyer for former Southern Baptist church leader, the Reverend Lonnie W. Latham, came up with a novel legal defense following the minister's arrest for soliciting sex from an undercover policeman. He argued this week that his client had a constitutional right to do that. While all parties agree that there was no offer of money, authorities say Latham asked the undercover cop in early January to come up to his Oklahoma City hotel room for oral sex. Latham had vocally supported his denomination's resolution calling on gay men and lesbians to reject their sinful, destructive lifestyle. He's since resigned as pastor of the South Tulsa Baptist Church and stepped down from the executive committee of the Southern Baptist Convention, where he was one of four members from the state of Oklahoma. His attorney, Mac Martin, filed a motion this week to have the misdemeanor lewdness charge thrown out, arguing that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 2003 under Lawrence v. Texas that it was not illegal for consenting adults to engage in private homosexual acts. He told reporters that, "My client's being prosecuted basically for having offered to engage in such an act, which basically makes it a crime to ask someone to do something that's legal." Judge Roma M. McElway said she would issue a verdict in early March. If convicted, Latham faces up to a year in jail and a $2,500 fine.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 24th, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Charles Hall.
Music Vault. We have a vault? Yes, I think we have a vault. From 1996 and his album Splendid Wings, that was David Brown. Every Kiss is a Revolution. This is Queer Voices.
Hello, this is Greg Chapman and
Jennifer Renee.
And with us right now we have Rob Scamarta from the Mankind Project. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
I'm guessing that most people, our listeners, don't know what the Mankind Project is. So I think a good start is to tell us a little about it.
Sure. The Mankind Project is an international community. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, non-sectarian community of men that has training centers around the world. And our primary training is the New Warrior Training Adventure. But we are a community of men that's about personal growth and development and helping men to lead lives of integrity and accountability and authenticity.
And how does one get involved in this community?
Well, as I stated, the primary training, what we call the initiation, is the New Warrior Training Adventure. It's a 48-hour weekend that begins on a Friday evening and concludes on a Sunday afternoon. And it is the weekend that really initiates the man into the community and teaches him tools that we believe are the beginning of other tools that are available. We call it the New Warrior Training Adventure. And the weekend itself is an adventure, but the life that a man can lead in the community is also adventuresome.
Now, you have these trainings like every month, once a month?
The in Houston, we offer a training every month. As I said, they're an international network of training centers. There are trainings that go on around the world in Europe and Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, of course, United States and Canada. But here in Houston, a man has the opportunity to go on one any month of the year.
And you're here tonight specifically because there's...
We are a community of outreach and diversity, welcoming men of any race, color, creed, sexual orientation. We have a large number of gay men, gay and bisexual men, who are part of our Houston community. But really, as a statement of diversity, we've targeted the April weekend, April 13th, 14th, and 15th, as an enrollment focus for gay and bisexual men. So we're making a special outreach to the gay community to let men know that we want them to be part of our community. We've heard in the past that there are some men who don't feel, as a gay man or a bisexual man, that they would be welcomed into our community, and that's not true. We welcome any man of any sexual orientation, and it's a statement both to the community at large as well as to our community as a reminder that we're about diversity, we're about inclusivity, and we really want any man, regardless of his color, creed, sexual orientation, to be a part of our community. Because we think the gifts that he'll find within himself are a gift that the whole community and the whole world wants. And so by inviting men to be a part of our community, it's a benefit to the community at large. And so that's why we are making the special effort for gay and bisexual men. We also have special weekends that are focused, that are done in Spanish, that are focused to the Hispanic community. In November, we had a weekend that was for deaf and hard of hearing men, and much of it was signed.
In the interest of full disclosure, I'll say I actually did that weekend, and it was very powerful to have with that weekend the deaf community present. It was very powerful.
I wasn't on that weekend, as you know, but that's what I understand. Every weekend has its own power and magic, and you know, as I believe everyone would testify, that each weekend, each man will walk away from the weekend with different gifts and with a different awareness of his own goldenness. We use the terminology of gold and shadow that exists within each one of us. And your weekend will be different from my weekend, and yet this experience will be no less powerful, no less magical than any other weekend. So,
and how did you get involved in the Mankind Project?
I was initiated as a new warrior in May of 1997, almost 10 years ago. And at that time, I was not out as a gay man. I was still married to now my ex-wife, and had two children at the time, and I was having my own issues about not being authentic, not living in integrity. And my initiation into the new warrior community really was vital in terms of giving me the support and helping me to look at how I was not living in integrity, and so that I came out in 2002, and I feel very confident to say that but for my experience and the support from the loving men within the New Warrior community, I wouldn't have had the it would have been much harder to do without that. And that's men who are both gay and straight. It's a loving community, a supportive community of men, regardless of orientation.
May I ask a question? I was just curious because for the people out there like myself who have never been to something, the training, the warrior training, what is it you do? Or can you share some of the things that you do while on the weekend that can let us know what to look forward to?
This is what how I would respond to that, is that the processes are secret. As tradition, ancient cultures down through today, is that initiation rites are secret. And so we don't disclose exactly what the processes are. Mm-hmm. But what I can offer you is that after each weekend, there is an honoring ceremony in which every man who goes through the weekend has an opportunity to speak to what the weekend did for him and how he was touched by the weekend. And we have one of those coming up in a couple weeks, March 15th, in our community center. There will be an honoring ceremony for the men who are going to complete the March training.
Is that open for anyone to come?
It's open to the community, open to the public. There's no charge. It begins at 7 p.m. Our community center is at 6950 West 43rd, off of 290 and between 290 and the old Hempstead Highway. And I'd invite anybody who's curious about what exactly happens on the weekend. No one at this ceremony will tell you, but you'll be able to hear directly from men about the effects. And so that's what we believe is more important for people to know about, because there's another analogy I might use. It's like if you knew what your Christmas present was going to be 2 weeks before you opened it on Christmas Day, it wouldn't have the same impact as when you open it on Christmas Day and say, wow, thank you. And so that's what we believe about our weekend, is that there's a gift there that's being offered to you. And yes, it takes you to a certain amount of trust to trust mm-hmm. the process and to risk going. But there are, you know, we have over 3,000 men who've been initiated in Houston since our first training in 1991. Many of them will speak to you about their experiences.
Aside from the honoring ceremony, is there any other opportunities?
Yes, there are. There's what we call a head, heart, and soul presentation, which is a free 90-minute kind of visual presentation, an introduction to what we believe our work is about connection. It's about connection within myself and connection to you and connection to the whole world. And we're going to have two of those. The first one is going to be Thursday, March the 1st, and Wednesday, March the 7th, both at Bering Memorial Methodist Church at 1440 Herald. On Thursday, March the 1st, it's going to begin at 7:30, and it's, again, open to the public, no cost. Come spend 90 minutes with us, and we'll think you walk away with a better idea of what our work is about. And I'd also say we have a sister organization called Woman Within, and the presentation, Head, Heart, and Soul, is applicable to both what we experience as men on a new warrior training adventure and what women experience on a Woman Within weekend. Now, I've never been on a Woman Within weekend, but that's what I'm told. That
it's secret, too, I bet.
You got it. Exactly. It's secret, too. But and then the second Head, Heart, and Soul on March the 7th will begin at 6:30 for the HIV/AIDS support group there at Bering. So, you know, those are three events between now and April the 13th that if a man is thinking about coming on our weekend, and we certainly hope that he would the three events that are available to him or her if she's interested in coming on a Woman Within weekend to come out and learn more about us.
And of course, the weekend itself will have a cost.
There is a cost. We're a nonprofit, and so I think it's important for everybody to know that we're not looking to make money, but we're just trying to cover our own costs. There is financial assistance available, and so if a man is interested and feels this is something that he wants to do, that the time is right in his life to do the weekend, we don't want money to be a barrier. Money's a reality that we all have to deal with, there is financial assistance, and so we, whether it be a payment plan, however it's going to work best with that man, we want him to be there and money not be a barrier.
Now, you said you initially got involved in 1997?
Correct.
Right, so you've been involved 10 years.
I have.
You're
good in math.
Yeah, I can add. That's what calculus will do for you. So, for you, it's really been life-changing by the sound of it.
In many ways, it has. It's allowed me, as I said earlier, to really find the goal within me about what's true for me and how am I going to best live an authentic life to be in integrity with myself and with others.
So it's not just like because some people, they hear these kind of organizations and they just think, oh, that's just a feel-good organization.
Certainly, and it's not, because sometimes what I have to deal with with and what you might have to deal with is a painful experience. And how do I find the support and the tools necessary to deal with that? I mean, coming out for many gay men has been a painful experience. And so this is an opportunity for, particularly for a gay man or bisexual man, to find some kind of support within the community. And it's a very positive experience. What some people say, and I think it's true, is it doesn't change your life, but it changes the way I see my life. Because the people who are in my life before the weekend will be the same people who are in my life after the weekend. But my relationships with them, my connection with them, my ability to be truthful with them will change after the weekend.
I really like that. I mean, because that is, I mean, that's a very powerful statement.
Is that true for you?
Yeah, that's true for me. That was very true for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have a weekend coming up in mid-April. What are the dates?
The dates are April 13th, 14th, and 15th. I also should add that for additional information, we have a website, which is www.mkphouston.org. It's new, and so there's some segments on it which will say not available yet, but it's worth visiting. It'll give you some testimony from men about how the life is, the work has been changing for them and the connection they found in their lives. And then there's a website of the International Organization, which is mkp.org, which gives you even more information about the whole international community. But both of those websites provide information, and then the phone number at the community center is 713-629-1460. You can register for the weekend simply by calling or by going online to the website, either website, local or international, and register for the weekend.
And is there like a cutoff point in terms of the April weekend for registration?
Well, there is a maximum number of men, and so if that we reach that number, then there will be a waiting list that's created. We obviously want men to enroll and sign up sooner rather than later, just for our planning purposes. And if a man wants to do the weekend, wants to do a New Warrior Training Adventure but can't, April 13th, 14th, and 15th. On our website, you'll see the list of other training adventures that are coming up through this year that are available for a man to go to if there's a conflict with that particular date.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because every weekend would be a great weekend. I mean, there's not a particular urgency if you're gay to go to this particular weekend.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing about the weekend experience that's going to be different in April than it would be on any other time. We're not going to do it differently. But what we will do is, I think, have a sensitivity and, as I said, an outreach to gay and bisexual men. If there's a man who's straight who wants to go on this weekend in April, he's certainly welcome. We're just letting people know that that's what our enrollment focus is going to be. And as I said also, there are a large number of gay men active in our community who have been initiated on previous weekends that we have not yet had it. But we just believe this is a part of our growth and as our increasing efforts to be inclusive and to have outreach to all men in the community.
Is there a separate number that you call for the Woman Within series? I know that's not why you're here tonight, but since you've mentioned it three times, to make sure that if there's a woman out there that's found this interesting and is something she might want to do, is there a different number, or and when do they have theirs?
There is a different number, and unfortunately I don't have it with me, but there are links to their websites on our website. So if you go to mkphouston.org and to mkp.org, you'll find those links. They have, I think, three or four weekends a year, not as many as we have four men, I know they just had one in February, and I'm not certain when the next one is.
Okay, thank you.
So,
great.
Thank you for having me. This has been wonderful.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Rob Scamardo from the Mankind Project, and if you're interested in hearing more, you can go to mkphouston.org, mkp.org, and what's the number one more time?
713-629-1460.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your face crept into that space between my reflex and my resolve. Kind of like the crevice. You'll notice till it digs down the damn wall. And now we are sitting in the window. And your forehead is red hot. touching my knee and I am checking my pulse, making sure it hasn't quit on me. I'm sorry for thinking that I knew what I was doing. I guess what I do best is look like I am in control. But tonight, I am a soft and untamed thing, and I will wrap my breath around you till your exhale comes clean. I am checking my pulse, yeah, checking my pulse. Buried penny at the bottom of the pool. So I guess that makes me the fool. Diving deeper, if I'll stick you in my pocket, I'll shiny, you're precious and all not mine. A hidden forbidden treasure, maybe you're the worst kind, and underneath the surface all things loom larger. So I'm searching for your edges to fish you up, ship you up out of the water, and you are that sweet wish. She's thrown, I would have caught you in the air, girl, had I known, yeah. And now the space between these bodies surpasses the sum of its parts, and I'm crawling in between these moments, balancing words, hoping I don't get stuck. And I was thinking distraction, now I'm thinking distraction's a relevant thing, because I was casually splashing. Now I'm all casual, fish again, yeah. I am checking my pulse, yeah, checking my pulse. And in hot water, my brain just kind of puckers up, and I'm drowning jaws wide open now, cause my mouth just won't seem to shut. And you might just be a shiny thing, but you were the shiny thing I am pursuing. And when I said you talked too much, it was cause there was stuff I'd rather you'd have been doing. And then you take my breath, I say, hey, I need that to get back to the top. But we're beautiful down here, you say, you know, girl, the world won't stop. We are sitting in the window, your forehead is red hot, touching my knee, and I am checking my pulse, making sure it hasn't quit on me. I am checking my pulse, making sure she hasn't quit on me. Yeah, yeah. I am checking my pulse, yeah, checking my pulse.
Alex Olson from 2001, the year, that is, not the movie, and a song called Checking My Pulse, her album Built Like That, and Alex Olson, her first name is spelled A-L-I-X, Alex. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and we're here with Adriana Perez and Mark Shanahan from the Allies, the Act Out series, and you're here to talk to us about Hitchcock Blonde. Okay, said this beforehand. I saw it in the paper. I saw the little picture of it. I said, "Oh, that's interesting," and I set it aside to read. And then I saw that y'all were going to be on tonight. So first of all, how do you get in touch with the Alley for the tickets on this? Give us that information first, and we'll repeat it later.
Okay, great. Well, you can either call the box office, or you can visit the website, which is alleytheater.org, and you can buy a ticket for Act Out, and it'll include the pre-mixer that happens before the performance, which is the good thing about this show is that it's so much fun. We're going with a whole Hitchcock theme, so we're having a Hitchcock Blonde theme party. So you can wear a wig, you can dress up as your favorite Hitchcock Blonde, Tippi Hedren, Grace Kelly, Janet Leigh, whatever you like. We'll have complimentary appetizers, drinks. You get to mingle with fellow theater patrons and friends, and it's a good time. It's a good party.
Okay, now
It's on March 18th through March 18th.
Right.
And Thursday, March 1st is when it opens?
Yes. Well, the Act Out is on Thursday. Yes.
It's on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And the show starts at what time?
It's at 7:30. So Act Out will begin at 5:30.
Okay.
And then at 7:15, everyone will go down to the theater to watch it come on.
Oh, good. Mark, tell
yes.
us about the... Now, you're in the performance.
I am indeed, yeah.
And you're Alex, correct?
I do. I play the film professor, Alex.
Okay.
The play is sort of fascinating. Terry Johnson is the playwright. And Gregory Boyd, who's the artistic director at the Alley, is also the director of this one. And what's so fantastic about the play is that it takes place in three different time frames. One is in the present, where the film professor, played by me, and his young, attractive student go off to Greece to uncover this canister of film, which they think might be an unknown piece of film that Hitchcock shot in 1919. And then the Alley's James Black plays Hitchcock himself in 1959, interviewing an actress who may or may not be the body double for Janet Leigh in the infamous shower scene from Psycho. And finally, in 1919, the actual film that we uncover is also shown. The set includes actual videography and cinema on the set. So this is one of those great, rare occasions where it's a real perfect marriage of both cinema and theater, all in one show. It really is sort of a fascinating, and certainly a fascinating one to look at.
Oh, that's... And whose concept was this? You said the writer, but where did he get the idea? Where did this come from?
Boy, I'll tell you, he came up with the title, Hitchcock Blonde, and now, and I think, man, if only I'd come up with that. This is, I don't know what kind of visions he had in the middle of the night, but he came up with a fascinating premise, and so many of Hitchcock's films are about voyeurism and about men and women and men and how they treat women and how women rise above it or deal with it. And what is the quintessential Hitchcock blonde? Is she a heroine or a victim? And the play really tackles a lot of those issues pretty well. I happen to also, in a strange twist of fate, perhaps not so strange, I teach a class in Hitchcock at Fordham University in New York. So I've been down to the Alley several times to do plays down here, and it's one of my very favorite places to work in the country. It's just an extraordinary place, but and the audience has flocked to it. I mean, it's such a well-supported community. But it's really one of these strange experiences where I'm actually receiving emails from students writing papers about Hitchcock while I'm playing a film professor of Hitchcock in the play. So it's really kind of a rare
The ultimate
experience.
Paradox there,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Sometimes I think, wait, is this real or is this fantasy? And keeping in line with the play.
Well,
yeah.
Hitchcock was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I loved his stuff.
What's
I
your favorite Hitchcock movie?
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
North by Northwest.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Cary Grant, Eve Marie Saint,
mm-hmm.
James Mason.
I love that. You know, I can watch it time and time again. And, of course, anytime I'm you know, going through the TV guide and say, a Hitchcock one.
That's right.
You know, and if I'm not going to watch it, I make sure there's a VHS in there that records it so I can come back later to do so.
Well,
he had such a special way of telling a story.
Yeah. He often said that Hitchcock would say, my films are more... I won't do my Hitchcock impression. I'll leave
that
to
James.
Oh,
go ahead. Come on.
He said, my films are more like slices of cake than slices of life. And, you know, there always is a sort of heightened sense of mystery and suspense in his movies. And whether they're the really glamorous ones, like you mentioned, with North by Northwest or Rear Window or Vertigo, these sort of great Technicolor or Vista Vision movies from the 1950s with big movie stars, or a movie like Psycho, which he tried to make on the cheap to be like a real slasher pick for the day of 1960. He made so many different kinds of movies, and everybody always has sort of a distinct seared impression in their minds of what their favorite Hitchcock movie is.
And the movies always left you with a certain feeling when it was over with.
Yeah.
You know, almost, I'm still hungry. It's over, but I'm still hungry for more.
That's right. Yeah.
And that was so intriguing with him. And you're right. I have seen Rear Window, I can't count how many times, but every time I sit down and start watching it, I'm mesmerized.
Yeah.
I know what's going to happen.
Yep.
I know about the dog downstairs digging in the... You know, I know.
That's right.
But still, I still go...
And you still say, Grace Kelly, don't go in that window. He's coming around the corner. Right?
That's right.
And
absolutely.
It's been very fun.
You start talking to the TV.
Oh, yeah. Yelling at the TV. We did the series of showing some of the films over at the Museum of Fine Arts, and it's so great to sit in an audience and watch the films. because you hear people gasp and you hear people get excited. And so as we've put together Hitchcock Blonde, we've had these ideas of suspense in mind. And we've been in previews this past week, and finally having the alley packed with patrons and sitting there together looking at some of these Hitchcockian ideas of suspense. It's great when a scream happens in the play, or and you hear the audience first gasp and then laugh together, and or they just, you know, in, they know something's around the corner but they're not sure what it is. A lot of the things that Hitchcock used are in this play, and yet there's another level on it too, which really begs the question, why do we get together and watch movies and plays, and what is it about these stories that make us need to come together and think about these dark and sinister
ideas. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I hope the people listening are enthusiastic like we are about Hitchcock and Hitchcock Blonde. And again, tell us how to get in touch with you, get tickets, and tell us about the schedule on Thursday.
Well, Act Out will begin on Thursday at 5:30, and it'll run until 7:15. And then everyone, for the price of a ticket to Act Out, you get this amazing mixer before. So you'll get food, you'll get drinks, you'll get some music, a little bit of entertainment. You'll get to meet the cast. You know, we have specialty Hitchcock Blonde drinks, which Mark helped create, Vertigo Vodka.
Yeah, put me in a bar, and apparently I know how to create
one of them's called Vertigo, right?
Yeah. Vertigo Vodka.
Or the North by Northwest drink. Okay.
I thought beer window would be good, but that was shot down.
So if you want to find out more about our Act Out event, which is this Thursday at 5:30, you can go onto our website, www.alleytheater.org.
And one last thing I want to make sure that we've got, and that is... about Act Out series.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the overall. You know, you've got other performances during the year.
Yes, we do.
And so let's talk about that.
It's
I'm getting the sign. We'll have to save that for another show.
Yes. But all of our information's on the website.
All right. Adriana Perez, Mark Shanahan, thank you so much.
Thanks so much
for
coming.
Act Out series. This is Jennifer Renee. Thank you.
To go live at the Ryman, surrounded by Sirens of Brooklyn, in this month's audiophile, later in the program. On Valentine's Day, Gareth, one of the leaders of JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, was shopping in a St. Andrews Parish pharmacy when all hell broke loose. Three men of Gareth's acquaintance were followed into the store by a woman screaming anti-gay epithets, hollering that they should be killed. The woman soon attracted a crowd, and long before the authorities arrived, the men were trapped inside by a mob of over 200 crying out for blood. Meanwhile, inside, Gareth was on the phone with his contacts in the New York offices of Human Rights Watch, one of the international groups that has documented homophobic violence in Jamaica. They in turn mobilized activists in Geneva and Kingston to pressure the Jamaican Commissioner of Police and local authorities to intervene. It took over an hour for the police to arrive, and they provided little comfort. When Gareth objected to their aggressive and homophobic behavior, he was beaten. As they left the store under the protection of the police, one of the men was hit in the head with a rock, prompting the police to fire tear gas into the crowd. All the way to the station, the police continued to heap verbal abuse on the men they had rescued. There was even more name-calling and insults at the station before the police told them that they should be grateful and warned them never to return. The Valentine's Day confrontation was no isolated occurrence. More attacks and at least one murder have been reported since then. Incredibly, the situation is worse now than it was 2 years ago when Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch brought Gareth and his J-Flag compatriot Carlene to the U.S. to network with LGBT activists and lobby government officials for assistance. Gareth and Carlene, who could not then and cannot now use their last names, talked with This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle about their organization and its dangerous mission.
We are the only LGBT organization in Jamaica just now. JFLAG was formed in 1998. There was an increase in homophobic violence against gays and lesbians in Jamaica. So we see the need to create an organization which will represent gays and lesbians and be their voice and speak for them.
The situation was and is a very violent one that, you know, we all live in fear for our lives, because every day you get up, you're not sure if you'll be able to make it back home, because the Jamaican society is actually very, very homophobic. It's something that is deeply embedded in our culture, and also our religion and our music also emphasize the homophobia. Lesbians and gay men just couldn't go out and just be themselves. You know, they have to be closeted even to date. They face, you know, rapes and beatings and murders and, you know, no one to stand up for them.
You, in fact, lost one of the co-founders of J-Flag.
Yes, that's Brian Williamson. And Brian was there with us from the beginning. He shared the vision of J-Flag, and he was the face and the voice for J-Flag. He was the only person who was out, and was the only person who would go on national TV, have his picture printed in the press, be on the radio, on the talk shows, and being representing J-Flag and openly. And he was stabbed 92 times. The legacy that he left us was that of his courage and his willingness to work, and his belief in the whole thing that gays and lesbians deserve to be treated equal. We are continuing the work that he had started for us.
It can't be easy to continue knowing that that happened to him.
There's nothing that protects us, absolutely no law that protects us. And being activists as we are, it's even more dangerous, because, you know, of course, we'll be accused of, okay, so you want to come and taint this society with your homosexuality, you know, with your nastiness, you know, as I would put it in Jamaica. And in Jamaica, it's believed that homosexuality is a disease, and, you know, we need to be cured. And also that it's not a black people thing, it's something foreign, that, you know, it's a habit that we've learned. And therefore, you know, we're forced to live in the closet, to hide ourselves, to be ashamed of ourselves. As it stands right now, we are tired of actually hiding. You know, we just want to be living and be who we are.
As it is just now, there's nothing that we can really do within Jamaica itself, in that all the avenues are closed. And the channels that we would want to engage dialogue with, they're not receptive. So basically, we are left alone. We are ostracized. We are in the country, but we're not a part of the country, because the systems that are there for us to interface with and that would protect everybody else is not there for us. So what it leaves us is in a position where we have to work with other international organizations for them to share their expertise and help us develop strategies. One, for us to cope. That's even the main part of it, to help us cope, to continue to do the work that we're doing. And also to help us to develop some strategies that we'll be able to use to put pressure on our government to, at least in the initial stage, to create a platform that we can have dialogue. And also to heighten the awareness and let people know that there is a high level of homophobic violence in Jamaica, and also to
form solidarity with other organizations, not to just to listen to what we have to say, but at least let us build some bridges and give us a strength, because, you know, we do need strength. And us fighting our battle alone in Jamaica, you know, oftentimes kind of make us discouraged. So at least if we know that we have other LGBT people in our corner, and who are ready, you know, to back us, that's strength for us. And we're also seeking that members of government, like in the State Department or Congress that we've met with, to have them engage Jamaican government in a conversation, a debate about the treatment of the LGBT people.
And also on the premise that Jamaica has signed on to many international treaties that it speaks to human rights. And trust me, we're not living up to that. And a part of it also, which is sad, is that if a Jamaican citizen can be murdered because of his sexual orientation, there's no guarantee that a foreigner, an outsider, will not face that same kind of a situation. So we are asking that, even though it is not an America problem or a European problem, it's a human rights situation, and it involves everybody. And so we're asking, like, for government officials here in the States to take action, because the United States is a powerful country, and we all know that.
The power is not used always in the best ways.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Come on, get up, stand up. Brothers, stand up for your rights. Come on, get up, stand up. Sisters,
You'll hear more of Lucia Chappelle's conversation with Gareth and Carlene of J-Flag, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, next time on This Way Out.
I'm a part of the process, and I'm giving my all to it. And for what I can give to J-Flag and for what I can give to my fellow gays and lesbians in Jamaica, I'm going to give it. And it will never be the same after I make my transition. It will never be the same.
The injuries Gareth suffered in the recent police beating were deemed serious, and he and the other victims have been urged to go into hiding. J-Flag is asking that protests against the Valentine's Day incident be lodged with Jamaican embassies around the world. The LGBT denomination Metropolitan Community Churches recently formed a group in Jamaica, and it's launching a campaign to stop the violence. For more information on how you can help defend the rights of queer Jamaicans, email admin@jflag.org or Rev Robert Griffin, that's REV ROBERT GRIFFIN @mccchurch.net.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
A country favorite's nostalgic salute and two debut CDs comprise the melodic offerings in this month's audiophile.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, baby. Hallelujah, she's rolling on home singing. Hallelujah, hallelujah, baby. Hallelujah, standing all alone.
The last album by country singer Kitty Rose won her an Out Music Award back in 2005. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. And this time, she takes her music back to capture the 70s.
400,000 miles, a broke-down truck. I crawled out of Nashville on my broken-down luck. Falling to rust in the hell.
Live at the Ryman is my recreation of a WFM radio broadcast from the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee back in the early 70s. I've tried to mix reality and fiction here in an April Fool's drag show kind of way, which I'm hoping will not only deliver a new set of classic country tunes, but also inspire folks to dust off them old Patsy records again.
It's only 2 hours north from the city by the bay. If you blink, you might miss it, but it's where I stay. I take my coffee black. The Bluebird Cafe, gas and off the farm, and a burger's my way. Some people think it's just a dark map, but I gotta get to Hoplin, cause I'm walking back.
Find out more about Kitty Rose live at the Ryman at www.kittyrose.com.
You came riding in to my one horse town, and my head took a spin when your boots hit the ground. You bellied up to the bar with that squinting glance, that kind of makes my heart skip a beat, that takes the weight from my feet and pulls it back into my pants.
With lyrics like that, you just want to find out what happens. And you can do that in the album Sirens of Brooklyn by Robert German.
Sirens of Brooklyn is my first album. It's made up of 12 songs, all very much from my heart. I wrote, produced, and performed all the songs. It's inspired by New York and a 5-year relationship that I was in, and it's very much my little baby.
Buy me flowers, tell me tales, just need a strong man. Put the wind back in my sails. I could sail away or I could stay right here. Just need a strong man to make it clear. Clear.
boat in the water. I got my fishing net. I got a heart for adventure and 2 feet to get wet. I could just squeeze the sand between my toes, or I could pull up the anchor, wave goodbye to the coast.
You can get more information about Robert German and his album, Sirens of Brooklyn, at www.robertgerman.com.
Are you traditional? Are you contemporary? Tenor, bass, or baritone? That's what they'd ask me down on Music Row. But I don't know what I'd say but this. After searching low and high, I finally hit my niche.
For many years, Brian Glenn has been a very in-demand Nashville session singer and musician, and has backed up Marty Stewart and his band since 2002.
While he's still in Marty's band, he's now released his own album called Original Intent.
I've had many wonderful opportunities to work with other artists on their music, but my new album, Original Intent, was an opportunity to create my own music and do what I felt without being in the shadows. So it was really gratifying to do that, and in the life of any artist's work, I think that's something that must be done from time to time. So the album title, Original Intent, helped me stay true to that vision.
More about Original Intent, the debut album by Brian Glenn, at www.brianglenn.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their fear.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and this month I'm calling my show Bear Music. I'll explore the music of the bear community, and this part of our culture started roughly in the mid-1980s. The song snippet you just heard, of course, does not come from that period. It's from 1932, and it's Teddy Bear's Picnic by Henry Hall and his orchestra out of England. But I wanted to use it as a segue into a modern version of the song, one definitely intended for gay male bears. It's from 2000 and is by Martin Swinger from his album Bare Naked. Here's Martin's version of Teddy Bear's Picnic.
If you go down to the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down to the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic. Every teddy bear who's been good is sure of a treat today. There's lots of marvelous things to eat and wonderful games to play. Beneath the trees where nobody sees, they'll hide and seek as long as they please, because that's the way the teddy bears have their picnic.
time for little teddy bears. The little teddy bears are having a lovely time today. Watch them catch them unaware. See them picnic on their holiday. See them as they gaily gallop about. They love to play and shout. They never have any care. But at 6 o'clock, their daddies will take them home to bed because they're tired little teddy bears. If you go down to the woods today, you better not go alone. It's lovely down in the woods today, but safer to stay at home. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic. Picnic time for little teddy bears. The little teddy bears are having a lovely time today. Watch them catch them unaware. See them picnic on their holiday. See them as they gaily gad about. They love to play and shout. They never have any care. But at 6 o'clock their daddies will take them home to bed because they're tired little teddy bears. At 6 o'clock their daddies will take them home to bed because they're tired little teddy bears.
Martin Swinger and Teddy Bears Picnic. And I've got an interview with Martin later in the show. The show also includes an interview with Freddie Freeman, a talented artist and also the founder of a series of music events held around the country called Bearapalooza. What's a Bearapalooza? Well, I want to read to you a description taken from Freddie's Bearapalooza website that'll help explain the focus of my show. Bearapalooza is a unique rock concert event bringing together talented musicians of the bear community. The bear community is defined in different ways by different participants, but underlying all the definitions is an effort to redefine ideas of masculine beauty, especially for gay males. For many years, the stereotypical image of male beauty has been thin, young, and hairless. This may be some people's preference, but the bear community embraces a different ideal of male beauty. Stocky to large, hairy, usually with facial hair. In essence, the word bear embraces men as they are, in many forms, shapes, and sizes, as they tend to naturally be. Okay, I think that gives us a good starting point, and we're going to flesh out these ideas in my first interview of the show. It's with Greg Hudson. While Greg has a background as a musician, a few years ago he started his own label, called Whoopi Bear Music. And I would say he's been one of the people doing the most to get exposure for the music of artists who identify with the bear community. He's released a series of compilation CDs called Bear Tracks, and they've helped bring together some of these artists. My interview with Greg started out with the basics. What is a bear?
What is a bear? Well, there's many different versions of this answer. Actually, and many of them are right. There's no really wrong answer, I guess, to this. Traditionally speaking, I guess, in the gay genre, a bear is a big old burly guy that's, not your traditional slim, type build, you know, so it's just, I don't know, there's not really any right answer, but there's no wrong answer either, so it just depends on the interpretation.
So, is there a bear community?
Yes, there is. Many cities have the bear communities, what they call the bear clubs. They're spread, I guess, every state in United States, Canada, Mexico, there are bear clubs. They're not really linked together, per se, as far as one big community. Most clubs are doing their own thing, whether, you know, like projects and things going on as far as what they call bear runs, where they raise money for charity, things like that, or just have like parties and stuff. And so it's, in most cases, it's basically like a community of where people can just feel like they are who they are.
Since I'm trying to tell the story through music, if you had to define the idea of bear music, what would you say?
Okay, bear music, as far as the genre goes, as far as bear tracks goes, the bear tracks that we have released, we have 4 volumes of bear tracks, and most of these songs are recorded by and sang by and performed by gay bear men. There's not really any style of music that you would say consider bear music. There's, you know, country songs, there's dance music, there are, you know, pop music, there folk, acoustic. Basically, Bear Tracks represents the talent, I guess it would be the best way to say it. Bear Tracks represents the talent of what the Bear men have to offer.
And how do you figure out who's a Bear artist?
Some of that may be considered like in, I guess, appearance. Some of it could be in, like, I guess, personality or attitude. It just depends on, like I say, individual interpretation. What some people may see as a Bear, some other people may not see as or recognize that as a Bear.
Why did you start Whoopi Bear Music?
This has to go back several years. back in the 80s, back when I was around 19, 20 years old, I was in a thrash metal band. And we recorded two full-length albums. Actually, it was on vinyl at the time, and CD also came out at that same time. So our first two releases were on vinyl, cassette, and CD. But we also had some singles on some compilation albums that came out, and the compilation albums really pushed our CD releases that we had just finished. And also knowing how compilation albums really help the artist, I decided, what if I released a compilation CD series that would help some of the gay artists? And so the release of Bear Tracks 1 was released in 2004, was when Bear Tracks 1 was released. So using my talent from the thrash metal band that I was in back in the 80s, I decided to just stay in the music scene, but not as far as a performer, but more of a promoter, and try to help some of the gay artists get more recognition that they really deserve.
Well, I love the title Bear Tracks. That's such an obvious and appropriate title for the series.
It came to me just out of the blue, just one time I thought. First of all, I wanted to do something for the Bear artist, because I had heard of, like I said, you know, there was Mark Weigel, you know, Tommy Johns, Martin Swinger, you know, Kendall, Ray Baker, others. All these people were on Bear Tracks 1. Just a lot of great music. I mean, there's a lot of just great talent that I figure that individually they're really trying to push their music, but it's hard to do it individually these days with so much other, I guess you might say, competition that's out there. So I figure if we put everything under one roof and try to give people a taste of what these people have to offer, maybe this would help the artists get a little, you know, expand their fan base.
Is there a song that stands out to you as dealing lyrically with the Bear culture?
I would have to say probably, well, I don't know about the first music, but I'd say one of the best songs that deals with the Bear culture would be by Leroy Lamb. He is an artist from Canada, and he's on Bear Tracks 2 with his song called What It Feels Like for a Bear, which is actually a parody of Madonna's song What It Feels Like for a Girl. And lyrically, this song kind of like goes into how Bear feels and how they are accepted and how they are, you know, in and out of clubs and things like that. Leroy Lamb's What It Feels Like for a Bear is probably one of the best songs as far as lyrically goes that describes a bear.
I see a bear.
Canada, that was Leroy Lamb with a little of What It Feels Like for a Bear. And that track can be found only on Greg Husson's CD, Bear Tracks 2. When I started researching this show, I quickly found that there was no particular musical genre for the music created by members of the Bear community. And I found a lot of music by Bear artists, so much so that this edition of Queer Music Heritage will be another one with a much extended version on my website, about 6 hours. That, of course, is at www.queermusicheritage.com. Now, almost by definition on my show, I've got to try to explore the history of Bear music. And that is a tough subject to research. But the earliest song by a gay artist that I found where the main lyrical focus concerned the Bear community was one from 1994. It was from an album called Vision of a Bear and was by John Topping. It's called I'm a Bear. By John Topping. From 1997, I found another obscure song right on the subject. It was by a duo called Woof, and they released a two-song cassette tape called Just a Bear.
I'm just a bear. I got lots of hair. From my head down to my toes. Beauty queens, just don't you know? I got someone who cares. We do it in the woods and everywhere, just don't you know? I'm just a bear. I'd like that one over there. Won't you please bring him to me? I don't want to be like those Kendall beauty queens. Cause don't you know? Someone who cares.
snow. I'm just a bear.
One artist I just can't leave out of this show was one of the first self-proclaimed bear musicians. And he sure proved that by going by the name Music Bear. His real name is Ray Baker, and his debut CD came out in 1998. But I've chosen to share with you a track of his from 2000 called Teddy Bear.
When I was a little boy, I had no friends to call my own. Just a warm and cuddly bear was my pal. Everywhere that I went, he was there to cheer me up. At my side, he was my first rhythm. Teddy bear, teddy bear, I'd reach out in the night and you are there. Teddy bear, teddy bear, all through the night with teddy bear.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And if you go to my site this month, you'll find a much, much longer show about bear music. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. I've been a fan of this next artist for many years, and I give him credit for releasing the first album directly geared to the bear community. He's Martin Swinger, and in 2000, he released a CD called Bear Naked. And of course, in that title, bear is spelled B-E-A-R. Some editions of that album should be considered collector's items because they have fur glued to the outside. Very cool. You heard Martin's version of Teddy Bear's Picnic at the start of the show, and he's got a lot more great music. Martin, you've told me that you don't consider yourself a bear, but I know that your music has been very well received by the bear community. Can you talk about that?
It's been very interesting. I think, of a bear, I think of a pretty large guy mostly, usually pretty hairy-chested. There are certain elements that really make me visualize what a bear might look like, and I'm not any of those. I'm 6 foot tall and fairly slender, and I've got a little goatee. But the bears, when I go to a bear event, they say that I'm welcome as a bear because I've got as long as I've got some kind of facial hair, I'm acceptable to them. But I don't really see myself as a bear. The thing about the music is that when Brian first started talking to me, Brian's my partner who really convinced me to do this. I owe it all to him. To put the album together, I had a handful of songs, like My Uncle Walter Goes Waltzing with Bears, and I knew Teddy Bear's Picnic. So, those two are kind of obvious, and from there I wasn't quite sure where to go. So I tried looking at songs from the idea that there was the word bear or the image of a bear in it, and while there are a few songs like that, not a lot of them really spoke to me as anything that would speak to a bear. A person who's into the bear culture. So I tried to take a broader look at it, and again, Brian helped me kind of open up my eyes to what would bears be interested in. And then, bears are interested in food, and they're interested in sex, they're interested in each other, they're interested in relationships, they're interested in justice, they're interested in a lot of things.
You were a little at a loss for words when I asked you in an email about the idea of quote-unquote bear music.
Yeah. Well, that was a tough thing. That was the period that I was going through where I was looking for songs that said the word bear. When I go to bear gatherings, again, my experience has taught me that at a bear gathering, it's just as easy to have a conversation with somebody about opera or classical music as likely you would have a conversation about the country music or any other. Every bear has a different kind of music that appeals to them.
Oh, I don't think it's a genre of music.
No, I don't think it's a genre at all. I don't think it could be categorized as a genre. So when we do a Bearapalooza, the fellas there may sing anything. Original songs, Joni Mitchell, you just don't know what somebody's going to sing. But if they identify with a bear, identify as bear, it becomes bear music in its own way. So it seems to work, and the bears seem to are willing to take in everything that anybody will sing.
How has the Bare Naked album been received?
It's been received very well, and interestingly enough, I still get found. I still get discovered through emails, people searching through cdbaby.com, and they come across the Bare Naked album, and they'll buy it every now and then. Will Be Bear has been really good with their productions. The Bear Tracks albums has introduced my album to a lot of people. So I hear, you know, get it from a lot of different angles. It's a nice thing to be discovered. And then, of course, singing at the Bear events has been wonderful. I always sell a lot of CDs there. The advantage of hearing me live at the Bear events is that my CDs are the coffee table edition with fur, you know, glued around the edge. It's a real clever marketing scheme that Brian came up with. It's a very fun, very fun album cover. And I'm able to do that live, where I can't really do that with mail orders. So there's the advantage of hearing me live at a bear event.
I started the show with the song Teddy Bear's Picnic. Could you comment on that song?
Comment on Teddy Bear's Picnic. I think it's just a really fun song. It's kind of an old vaudeville song, British, you know, from British vaudeville, where it came from originally. And it's just romping images of bears having a good time together. And when I go to the bear events, that's what they're doing. You know, they're enjoying food, and that's what's happening at this Teddy Bear's Picnic. They're enjoying each other's company. They're dancing with each other. It just seemed like a very nice, in the double entendre sense, it seemed like a very nice celebration of bear community and the bears, the way they treat each other. So that's why I picked that song. It's a children's song, basically, but I thought it worked real well for the bears. I get a lot of comments on it.
Please tell me about Teddy Bear's Lullaby.
Teddy Bear's Lullaby was the response to Teddy Bear's Picnic. I'd already recorded the picnic song and realized I needed something to counterbalance it, and that there was not really a lullaby planned for the album, and the idea of writing a lullaby just appealed to me. So I sat down one evening, and that was one of the rare songs that came to me very quickly. I started thinking about, you know, my honey bear and what kind of lullaby I might sing. And the ideas came to me amazingly quickly. And, you know, it's a lullaby because it's a lullaby, but I'm happy to use the word honey bear and just to make references in it that really describe the person I'm thinking of. And again, the bears seem to respond to it. This song will make bears cry. it's a very poignant, I guess. It's perhaps a bit romantic, but I'm a bit of a romantic, so that seems to work.
Oh, fuzzy-faced friend of mine, it's bedtime, so lay down with me. You've had a rough day today, but now it's done, so lay down with me. When I'm feeling sorry, you know what to do. I'm here to give back what I learned from you. I'll hold you all night if you want me to. If you only lay down, teddy bear, by my side, close your eyes and let me rub that heavy world from off your shoulder. It's grown colder, but I'll warm you like fire. My heart is burning for you. Lay down and let me show you. From your dark eyes, I see the light in you. can't you see you made me love you? There's no place I'm going to but here with you. You made me love you. When I'm feeling sorry, you know what to do. I'm here to give back what I learned from you. I'll hold you all night if you want me to. If you'll only lay down, teddy bear, by my side. Close your eyes and let me rub that heavy world from off your shoulder. It's grown colder, but I'll warm you like mine. 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 I'll warm you like
This song is very cute. Please tell me about the song Huggin' and Chalkin'.
Huggin' and Chalkin', oh, what a great adventure. This is a song from the 1950s written by a man named Kermit Goel. And Brian was familiar with the song. It was originally Huggin' and Chalkin'. It was I Got a Gal Who's Mighty Sweet, Big Brown Eyes, and Tiny Feet. It was about a gal, but that was the only reference to her, to a woman in the whole song, was that very opening thing. And Brian used to sing snippets of it to me. We always thought it was a cute song, but I'd never really come across it. And then I was down in Atlanta, you know, while we were starting to work on the album, starting to think towards it. I was down in Atlanta flying back to Maine, and a friend of mine got on the plane, a fellow named Avner Eisenberg, who is a comedian and performer, Avner the Eccentric. Well, he's from Maine, and I know him and have met his wife, Julie, as well. Avner got on the plane same time I did, and we were informed we were going to have to sit there for an hour. So Avner came back and sat beside me, and we just kind of caught up with each other. And we were talking about music, and he said, well, yeah, my wife's father was a songwriter, but you wouldn't be familiar with anything he ever wrote. His biggest tune was a song called Huggin' and Chalkin'. And I just about hit the ceiling when he said it, because we'd been looking for this song. And then to find out my friend Julie, it was her father that wrote it. So we contacted Julie immediately and just said, Julie, we've got this crazy idea about changing a couple of words in this song and recording it. And she said, let me check with my brother. She checked with her brother and said, go for it. So allowed us to change it from I Got a Gal Who's Mighty Sweet to I Got a Bear Who's Mighty Sweet. And the song works great from there. The bears are great about celebrating larger men as part of their culture, and this song was, again, just a beautiful celebration of size. So that's why it was an important song. I felt very lucky to be able to put it on the album.
I got a bear who's mighty sweet, big brown eyes and furry feet. He likes to cook and he loves to eat, and he tips the scales at 303 OG. But ain't it great to have a bear so big and fat that when you go to hug him, you don't know where you're at? You have to take a piece of chalk in your hand and hug away some chalk a mark to see where you began one day. I was a hugging and a chalking and a chalking and a hugging away when I met another fellow with some chalk in his hand. Coming around the other way. Coming around the other way.
want to hug him, you don't know where you're at. You have to take a piece of chalk in your hand and hug away some chalk, a mark to see where you began. One day I was a hugging and a chalking and a begging him to stay by my side, when a man on a battle with some chalk in his hand coming around the other side. Oh my, coming around the other side, baby's on my wine, coming around the other side, over the mountains, across the great divide.
You've got quite a fan in Freddie Freeman.
Well, he's a real sweet man, and I'm a Freddie Freeman fan as well. He's an amazing performer, an amazing energy, creating all the Barapaloozas, all that work that he's doing is just magnificent, and he's an incredible performer. When I hear him live, oh my gosh, he just he's an incredible writer, and his voice is so good, and he's great about getting people up singing with him, and I'm in awe of him. So we're in a mutual admiration society.
And we're going to talk with Freddie Freeman in a few minutes, but I've got another Bear song I just have to play. It was originally written around 1974 by a country artist named Stephen Fromholtz and appeared on his album, A Rumor in My Own Time. As far as I know, he's straight, and the cover of his album certainly has him looking very much a bear. The song is called Bears, and the lyrics of it have many, many parallels to two-legged bears. This was not unnoticed by Mark Weigel, another of my favorite artists, who included the song on his 2002 album, Out of the Loop.
Woof.
Some folks never seen a bear at all. Some folks say that bears go around eating babies raw. Some folks got a bear across the hall. Some folks say that bears go around smelling bad. While others say that a bear is a honey sweet. Some folks say this bear's the best I ever had. Some folks got a bear beneath their feet. Some folks drive the bears out of the wilderness. Some see a bear would be fate. Me, I just bear up to my bewildered best. Some folks even see the bear in me.
This very full show is with Freddie Freeman, and you've heard him mentioned a couple times already. I met him almost 5 years ago, in March of 2002, when he was first beginning to brave sharing his music with people, and I was immediately impressed. And he blossomed fast. That year he released his first CD and became the founder of Barapalooza. and his music has expanded to include many genres. He's just released a new album called Break the Silence, and I asked him about it.
Break the Silence is an album that I've been working on for about 6 years now. It's a collection of songs that represent a lot of the struggles that I've been through, a lot of the growth and a lot of the lessons. It crosses a lot of genre lines. It's really hard to put me in a genre category, because you might go from, like, the opening track is very, very rock, like very bar rock, and then you go into a folk country kind of sound. It just runs across a wide spectrum of what I've been influenced by growing up and as a musician, as an adult. Lyrically, it like I said, it has a lot of lyrics about accepting yourself and growing and learning, dealing with heartbreak. And I kind of look at the album as just a glimpse into my journey over the last 10 years or so. And there's a lot of great musicians on it, and they really capture what I think I'm about. My pride in being an out gay artist, my pride in my art, my pride in my identity as a bear are all included in this.
Why did you start Bearapalooza?
Why did I start Bearapalooza? Because I actually, before I started going to out music open mics in 2002. And before I had discovered out music, I was just kind of doing music in my room, not really putting it out there. And I started going to the open mics, and I suddenly discovered that, you know, I could do something with this passion for music and share it with my community. And at the same time that was going on, I was also discovering this new identity of the bear community. And I was, like, doing things with the Metro Bears of New York. And for some reason, I just, like, these two things that I loved and that were giving me a new sense of who I was and helping me to grow and become more of who I really am, they just seemed to go together. And I knew a couple of guys in the bear community who were musicians. And at the time, Chris Landhair was doing a show at Finally Fred's in the Village, and he had a night where he thought he was going to be out of town. He thought he was going to be in Australia, and he said, you know, I got this night and I need somebody to take it over and do it. And I said, you know, I do have this little bear thing I've been wanting to do. I don't know how big a deal it would be or anything, but I'd really like to do it and get a couple of my bear friends together and have a little concert. So I decided to take the night over, and I asked Martin Swinger to do it, and I asked Ernie LaJoy and a couple other people, and I just started advertising it around town, and it turned out that my little idea for me and my friends, like, somehow resonated with the community. And, you know, it was sold out, and I couldn't fit people in the club, and so it was kind of a surprise to me. It was just something that I wanted to do for myself and my community. And I was surprised that it kind of took off. And I've been doing it ever since.
Let's get to one of your songs. And the first of your songs to make a big impact with me was Echo.
Echo has been my friend for many years. I wrote it just walking around the streets in New York City one day. I was just like, I live in this big city. There's all these people around, but I still don't feel that deep connection. I still don't feel sometimes I felt like completely alone on the subway. And I think that's very common for a lot of people who live in the city. Because having all those people around, especially in a big city like that, doesn't necessarily mean that you're connecting. I started thinking about, you know, well, I want to hear something from somebody else that says, like, you know, I resonate with you. I get you. And I kind of translated that into hearing an echo come back. And I just started playing it at the open mic. And again, it was one of those surprises. For some reason, like, most of the people I've played my music for, they just zoom in on that song and they go, oh, I really resonate with that. You know, that really hits me in the heart. And I really know what you're talking about.
I live in a city filled with millions of people, but I still feel all alone.
noises of technology and progress, fax machines and cellular phones. Wanna hear a voice that rises above them, telling me I'm not the only one. Wants to hear a sentiment that sounds familiar. Of life in the emptiness, I'm waiting for an echo. Got my ear to the ground, listening for a sound that's gonna save me. I got my heart as a guide, my eyes are open wide this time. I'm listening for sounds of life.
What are your plans for future Barrapaloozas?
Well, 07 is looking to be kind of busy, actually, with Barrapalooza. There's two things that I have in the works that aren't definitely 100%, but we're negotiating them, and they'll both be new locations for us. One is August in Washington, D.C., and the other is in May in Houston, Galveston. So that should be exciting. And then we have two shows that are now going to be annual shows, of course, here in Nashville, because that's where I'm based out of. And that'll be at the end of September for the annual Bear Jam here. And then just this past November, we did our first show at a campground in Florida, just outside of Tampa, called Sawmill Campground. It's a gay campground. And we had such a good time there, and they loved us so much that they're asking us to do it annually. So that'll be in the beginning of October.
And your song, Free Man, I love the pride that you include in the lyrics. I'm a free man, a big man, a fat man, and a hairy man. How did that song evolve?
Free Man I wrote because I was thinking about my dad, of all things. And I haven't spoken to my dad in like 15 years, really. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm gay. And I started thinking about, you know, like, my last name is Freeman. What connection do I have to my dad or his side of the family? I mean, I have no connection to that side of the family. And I started thinking, what does this name mean to me? Like, what does it mean to be a Freeman? Like, and I started thinking of it less as my dad's name and more of a power word. And so I started thinking, what does it mean to be a free man? What it means to be a free man is to be able to do your best, make mistakes, love yourself, love the people around you, love your identity, love your body, and, you know, just embrace who you are as yourself. And one of the big things that I say in the song a lot is, you know, how I make mistakes, I stumble, I have bad habits, and that'll never change. Well, you know, some things will change. We change until we die. But some things may never be perfectly the way I want them to be about myself. But I love myself despite that. I embrace who I am. And that's what Free Man is about.
Too many years have been wasted. Too many lies have been told. Too many tears have been tasted on my lips. Too many dreams have been sold. Starved of light in this room, craving the warmth of the sun, I dive naked into the joy of self-discovery. I am born. I'm a free man. Loving who I am, nothing more and nothing less. Free man.
because in time I will grow. I'm loving me, perfect in my imperfection, proud of who I love and who I am. I'm aware that I am a contradiction, shadows and light combined. I'm a free man, loving who I am, nothing more and nothing less.
Song, at least of the radio version of the show. But before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Greg Hudson, Martin Swinger, and Freddie Freeman for the interviews. And, as I had expected, the interviews were so good that I could not fit all of them into the radio version of this show. And especially, I could not fit in all the music. So my internet listeners can hear a very extended version with a lot more comments and additional music. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And, as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. As I researched and worked on this show over the last few weeks, I developed a list of about 50 artists and over 80 songs I wanted to pick from. And I pretty much knew right away that I wanted to start the show with Martin Swinger's Teddy Bear's Picnic, but I wasn't sure how I would end it. Well, my thinking sort of evolved to very logically provide me my answer. I'll end this feature on Bear music the same way Freddie Freeman ends every Bearpalooza show. So, of course, I had to ask him about his song, Fat Bottom Bears.
Fat Bottom Bears. Well, again, I felt like for Bearpalooza, I wanted to do something that really kind of captured that essence of loving big men and celebrating big men and putting that big man up there as that pinup on the pedestal instead of the usual thin, hairless young guy. And I don't know, I just started thinking about Queen. I started thinking about Fat Bottom Girls, and I went, you know, I could change the lyrics around a little bit. It'd be really fun. And it's become, at Bearpalooza's, kind of the ending of the night when everybody gets on stage and they all join me in singing this song. and it's always a lot of fun.
Here's Freddie Freeman with all the performers from Barrapalooza 2003 at CBGB's Lounge in New York City.
Are you gonna take me home today? Down beside your red fire. Are you gonna let it all hang out that bottom bears? You make the rocket world go round. I was just a silly lad, didn't know no good for bad. I knew love as soon as I reached puberty. Left alone with Big Fat Daddy, he was such a dirty daddy. Big Daddy made a bad boy out of me. I've been singing with my band, across the wire, across the land. I've seen every blue-eyed Twinkie on the way. I will kind of smooth after a while. Take me to those hairy daddies every time. Are you gonna take me home tonight?
Listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt. The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.